ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 8 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द सन्स ऑफ सगर मीट लॉर्ड कपिल देव। टेक्स्ट नंबर 1। श्री शुक आचा हरितो रोहित सुत चंपस्तास्तस्माद् विनिर्मिता चंपापुरी सुदेवोतो विजयो यस्य चात्मजः। The son of Rohit was Harit, and Harita's son was Champa, who constructed the town of Champapuri. The son of Champa was Sudev, and his son was Vijay. Since there is no purport, we'll read the following few verses till Srila Prabhupada's purport. Text 2. The son of Vijay was Bharuka, Bharuka's son was Vrika, and Vrika's son was Bahuka. The enemies of King Bahuka took away all his possessions, and therefore the king entered the order of Vanaprast and went to the forest with his wife. Text 3. Bahuka died when he was old, and one of his wives wanted to die with him, following the Sati rite. At that time, however, Aurva Muni, knowing her to be pregnant, forbade her to die. Text 4. Knowing that she was pregnant, the co-wives of the wife of Bahuka conspired to give her poison with her food, but it did not act. Instead, the son was born along with the poison. Therefore, he became famous as Sagara, one who is born with poison. Sagara later became the emperor. The place known as Ganga Sagar was excavated by his sons. Text 5 and 6. Sagara Maharaj, following the order of his spiritual master, Aurva, did not kill the uncivilized men like the Talajangas, Yavanas, Shakas, Haihayas, and the Barbaras. Instead, some of them he made dress awkwardly, some of them he shaved clean but allowed to wear mustaches, some of them he left wearing loose hair, some he half shaved, some he left without underwear, and some without external garments. Thus, these different clans were made to dress differently, but King Sagara did not kill them. Text 7. Following the instructions of the great sage Aurva, Sagara Maharaj performed Ashwamedh sacrifices and thus satisfied the Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Controller, the Supersoul of all learned scholars, and the knower of all Vedic knowledge, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Indra, the King of Heaven, stole the horse meant to be offered at the sacrifice. Text 8. King Sagara had two wives, Sumati and Keshini. The sons of Sumati were very proud of their prowess and influence. Following the order of their father, searched for the lost horse. While doing so, they dug into the earth with very extensively. Text 9 and 10. Thereafter, in the northeastern direction, they saw the horse near the ashrama of Kapila Muni. Here is the man who has stolen the horse, they said. He is staying there with closed eyes. Certainly he is very sinful. Kill him, kill him. Shouting like this, the sons of Sagara, 60,000 altogether, raised their weapons. When they approached the sage opened his eyes. Text 11. By the influence of Indra, the king of heaven, the sons of Sagara had lost their intelligence and disrespected a great personality. Consequently, fire emanated from their own bodies and they were immediately burned to ashes. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. The material body is a combination of earth, water, fire, air and ether. There is already fire within the body and our practical experience is that the heat of this fire sometimes increases and sometimes decreases. The fire within the bodies of the sons of Sagara Maharaj became so much hotter by all of them, so much hotter that all of them burnt to ashes. The fire's increased heat was due to their misbehavior toward a great personality. Such misbehavior is called Mahad Vyatikram. They were killed by the fire of their own bodies because of insulting a great personality. Hare Krishna. So long series of verses in this 8th chapter of the 9th canto. The verse that we read on the board, translation is as follows. Shukadeva Goswami continued, The son of Rohita was Harita, and Harita's son was Champa, who constructed the town of Champapuri. The son of Champa was Sudev, and his son was Vijaya. So, the dynasty of the Chandravangsha, of the Suryavangshis is being described in the 9th canto. And this chapter is describing the descendants of King Rohit, who, as we've learned from the previous chapter also, and those of you who still remember the stories from Indian histories that have been commonly passed down since generations, that Rohit was the son of the great king Harishchandra. And we know that how Harishchandra Maharaj was tested for his truthfulness and his adherence to the word that he had once given. Right? Raghukulareet sada chali aai pran jai vachan na jai. So this is a famous verse from one of the Indian saints, which describes the dynasty of the Supreme Lord Ramachandra. And we see that it was not just from one king, Raghu, who is just because he has given word to protect his subjects, including animals, specifically cows, King Raghu was ready to sacrifice his life to save the life of a cow because he had given word of protection. That was Raghukula Reet. That was the tradition in the Raghu dynasty, or the tradition of these kings who were the forebearers. Not the forebearers, but they were the forefathers. Sorry, wrong word. The forefathers of King Ram, of Lord Ramachandra. And then we find Harishchandra, the great emperor, also following the same tradition. And now the dynasty of Harishchandra up to King Sagara is being described. King Sagara was very powerful, and a few other Puranas and Itihasas describe his prowess. The Srimad Bhagavatam in short explains his great feats, that how he had conquered all directions and performed great sacrifices following the directions of his guru Aurva Muni. These sacrifices that enabled him to become the emperor of the entire planet. Vedic kings had to show their prowess, or let us not say Vedic kings, kings that knew or who are aware of the responsibilities and the qualifications to become an emperor, they needed specifically these two qualities. First and foremost was they had to be very much educated in the science of spirit. If one was not educated in the science of spirit, then one did not have the necessary qualifications to be a king or an emperor for that matter. The king of all kings. And secondly, they had to show their prowess. They had to be physically powerful themselves. They have to be very well versed in martial arts, arts of warfare, and subjugate the other kings, other small kings. Their spiritual knowledge allowed them to properly administer their own subjects and also deal fairly with the vassal kings or the subjugated kings, the kings who accepted them as emperors. Some of them indeed were very notorious. Despite having these two qualifications, they were indeed very notorious because they exploited the facilities they had because of these qualifications. You see, simply having qualifications does not necessarily mean that one will follow the path of dharma. One needs the necessary vision. One has to know the goal. And one has to be determined, patient to follow that path, to reach that goal. So some of these kings who had this knowledge, who were powerful, their knowledge came from great superiors, great rishis, great saints. The knowledge came from great ancestors, tradition, but they were notorious. Because they used their independent free will in the improper way. So therefore knowledge is not sufficient. One may be very knowledgeable, but if one does not properly control one's senses and use one's free will properly, then such knowledge is not only dangerous to one, but can create havoc in society. And that is what Kali Yuga is all about. Kali Yuga is about hypocrisy. People who have knowledge and they use it for fulfilling their exploitative tendencies. And also people who fake that they have knowledge and cheat people, exploiting their innocence for their own fruitive intentions. That is what is hypocrisy is all about. Hypocrisy simply does not mean cheating people because one does not have the necessary resources. Just fakes that one has resources. Cheating propensity also means that one has resources but cheats people of the real benefit that one can attain of those resources. Cheats oneself of the real benefit that one can have of those qualifications. So that is Kali Yuga, an age of quarrel and hypocrisy. So, these were the kings. They had these qualifications. And a list of all of these kings has been given. And we can see that some of them, they have such history. King Sagara was born when actually there was a plan that he should not have been born. And this was long before the appearance of Lord Ramachandra, right? So who says that even in Satya Yuga, everything is all right, or Treta Yuga, things are okay? There's always going to be the misuse of free will in this material world. And what was the cause of the misuse of free will? Oh, our husband is dead. We do not have any children, but this co-wife of ours has. No, she is bearing the seed of our husband. So better that the son, the child dies, and even the wife dies. Now, Puranas, they do not explain in detail, but what they explain is that immediately after the death of their husband, it is generally the practice that, or it was a practice that the wives, feeling separation from the husband, try to attain the same destination as the husband. This is a science which is not really well understood right now in Kali Yuga, and therefore we should not focus much attention on it. However, it was there, the science was there, that one could accompany one's husband whom one thought was one's guru, pati guru, to the destination that this husband attained. And the sacrifice or the yagya is called as the sati. So generally the queens would do that. These are Kshatriya queens. They were not afraid of giving up their bodies. One, because they knew they also had spiritual knowledge. And two, they were not, they always knew that a pain or tapasya for the body gives higher returns. So they are called as Kshatranis or Kshatriya kings. Kshat also means to cut. So they could easily cut that bondage. And that was the reason for them to follow this sacrifice. So when this queen was trying to do so, and it is not that all queens have to do like that. Those who feel. So there was this particular queen who felt that intense separation from her husband. So she wanted to do that sacrifice. She was stopped. That is when it was revealed that she is pregnant. So if one wants to follow the destination of her husband, that is one of the individual and personal rights of the wife, according to the sanskaras. The Vedic sanskaras give such rights, different rights and different responsibilities to the husband and wife. However, one has no right to determine the destination of another living entity, even if specifically in terms of taking life or not taking life. Even if one is the mother of the child, one has no right for that. None of the sanskaras allowed it. None of the 10 sanskaras in the Vedic tradition allow that. Therefore, Audra Muni stopped her and said that you have to undergo this fate. You have to give birth to this child. Although it is totally against your wishes. This sacrifice is much more greater than the sacrifice that you are about to perform for a higher cause. So, but the co-wives did not feel like that. So they poisoned her. And the king was born. The child was still born. This is providence. It's very difficult to understand how providence functions. Sometimes things that are meant to happen don't happen. Things that are not meant to happen, happen. Poison kills. In this case, it did not. Providence is one of the greatest energies of the Supreme Personality of God. It functions in this material world as a superintending authority. Everyone is governed by the will of providence. So, this child was born, and because they saw that the wife gave birth along with the child, that poison was also, you know, came forth from the womb. And what did everyone do? There were no accusations, because everyone knows that ultimately the fate of one's destiny is determined by the laws of karma. So not much accusations, or even if there were, that is not explained in the scriptures. Scriptures do not give, you know, they do not mention things which are really not relevant for our lives. So none of the aspects of accusations are given. What is mentioned is, since the child was born along with poison, he was called Sagara. That's it. This is important. Born along with poison, so Sagara. For all times his name is going to reflect that. Such prowess. Since birth, he was so powerful that could counteract the effect of poison. Then this child grows up to be a great king. And he gives forth to such powerful sons through two wives. One wife had 60,000 sons. Now since the king was performing Ashwamedh Yajnas, and Lord Indra, the king of heaven, he felt a little uncomfortable, thinking that maybe the king's intentions are different. The king wants to usurp my position. So he stole the sacrificial horse. Seeing the distress, not the distress, but seeing the sacrifice of their father not being completely fulfilled, the sons of Sagara offered as dutiful sons to get back the son, to get back the horse. What did they do? They started excavating, they started searching in all directions and not finding the horse in the 10 directions. They started excavating the earth, which is Ugra Karma. They were following as dutiful sons. They were trying to fulfill the mission of their father, or assist in the mission of their father. And the mission was a good one, Ashwamedh Yajna. However, in their great passion to achieve the goal, that passion resulted in excavating of the earth. What happened? They dug up the earth such, because they were so powerful and because they were doing this as part of this Ashwamedh Yajna for a great king, King Sagara, their father, their excavations resulted in something wonderful. Great oceans were created. However, because the activity was so ugra, it contaminated their consciousness. Such that, rather than simply achieve the goal, they started contemplating on the person who had created hindrance in the sacrifice. They became inimical towards Indra. Because for such a long time they were not getting the horse, they started blaming Indra for all this trouble. The trouble that they are going through, the trouble that their father was going through. They were excavating the earth, but they were blaming Indra for all of this. That is the nature of Rajogun. If you are too passionate to achieve our goal, passion is not wrong, provided every moment during the entire duration of that passion, we are under someone who has controlled his senses, knows the vision, and is guiding us. Such controlled passion is beneficial. And we have seen great rishis using the passion of Kshatriya kings in such ways. Wonderful results are obtained by controlled passion. However, when we take passion and allow it to control ourselves, become controlled by passion, even a good work, when we set out for a mission which is considered to be good, the results may not be really exactly what the mission wants. What happened because of this passion? Because they were contemplating on Indra's his so-called or so thought of bad qualities. Ultimately, they reached the place where the Ganga meets the ocean, the Ganga Sagar, and there they saw Kapila Muni. And what Indra had done, he knew that they would ultimately catch up with him. So he had devised a plan. And in his plan, he tied the horse close to the ashram of Kapila Muni. So when these kings in this intense passion, especially after this Ugra Karma, when they saw the horse tied near the ashram of Kapila Muni, their immediate conclusion was, this is a sinful person. And now he's trying to close his eyes and meditate and show something different. But we can't be fooled, for we see right through his deception. We have searched all the directions. We are powerful. We are coming. We are on a mission that is powerful, that is good. And we know this Indra is a big obstacle maker. And maybe they even had some other thoughts about Lord Indra. Because uncontrolled passion and judgmental attitude had contaminated the consciousness, circumstantial evidence made them do something which has been warned by Srila Prabhupada in the purport that one must be very careful not to do. That is called as Maryada Vyatikram. Maryada, we know Maryada, Lord Ram in India, Maryada, this word is, everyone knows, specifically because we know Lord Ram and Ramayan. Maryada Purushottam. Maryada means limits or boundaries. Yes, boundaries of good behavior, boundaries of proper religion. Generally Maryada is used in that, with that understanding. Vyatikram means transgression. There is a word known as atikraman or atikram. Ati means too much. Krama means activity or not sanctioned activity. So atikraman means forcibly taking over what is ours. Not ours, sorry, which does not belong to one. Like here, sometimes in India, this is very common. People see, no one is on this land, let us build something on it and claim it to be ours. So it is called as atikraman. Vyatikram means transgressing, not just capturing, but transgressing. When we capture, we say, all right, when something comes over, we will see how to handle that situation. Right now, let us just do atikraman, capture it and stay. That is it. We just want to have our selfish desires fulfilled. That's atikraman. It's bad. Definitely bad. One should not take over others' property because according to the Ishopanishad, we should be satisfied with one's own quota and not take over somebody else's quota. For with our own quota, we should try to achieve the goal of life, which is to please Isha, to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So atikraman is not sanctioned, taking over someone else's quota. However, vyatikraman means willingly, consciously trying to destroy not just someone's property, but destroy someone's or take over someone's life. Either physically or by destroying their reputation. Subtly. Grossly or subtly. That is known as vyatikraman. So maryada vyatikraman means transgressing the borders of etiquette or dharma, that which should be followed. That is called as maryada vyatikraman. So here, the kings, the sons of King Sagara, they did something which is known as maryada vyatikraman. Now, we mentioned this to some extent, the cause of such vyatikraman, right? So in the short time that we have, we'll try to understand how this happens. What is the reason? When Lord Chaitanya went to Kuvur, on the banks of the Godavari, you know, in South India, when he was on his South Indian tour, he was advised by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, "My dear Lord, since you are going to the South India, then please meet up with Ramanand Rai. He is such a wonderful devotee. His heart is filled with such love of Krishna. Definitely, your meeting will be very, very fruitful. So please, this is my request unto your lotus feet. Please meet up with him." So at Kuvur, Lord Chaitanya fulfilled that desire of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He met up with Ramanand Rai. And they had a wonderful discussion. Rai Samvad. And in that discussion, various topics of spiritual ecstasies were discussed. The various levels of spiritual ecstasies were discussed. What is spirituality to begin with? What is real spirituality? What is real devotion? So he began, Ramanand Rai began by quoting from the Bhagavad Gita, two verses. The first one he said, "Yat karoshi yadashnashi," and Lord Chaitanya said, na, eho bahiya. Aage kaha ar. This is bahija. This is not a real devotional service. It appears like devotional service. Whatever I am doing, whatever I eat, everything I offer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it appears so much like devotional service, yes? So many times, you know, as practicing devotees, the thought comes, we have done so much in Krishna consciousness. When that feeling comes up, we have done this. Like, a typical question in Krishna consciousness could be, how long have you been practicing Krishna consciousness? And the immediate response that comes to mind is so many years. Because we think we have done so much in Krishna consciousness. In terms of years, naturally, the aspect of humility may come in, at least theoretically, and we say, we have spent years in Krishna consciousness, but not exactly put our whole heart into it. That is what we've been taught, to be humble. Or to act humble, at least. But the thought that we have done so much in Krishna consciousness, that thought is rejected by Lord Chaitanya. Madharpanam. Oh, we have done so much. As soon as we say we have done this, and we have offered, that means we have done and offered it to Krishna. We have offered our words, we have offered our thoughts, we have offered our deeds to Krishna. He says, "Eho bhaija." This is not real devotional service. This is not how we can achieve the ananda or the pleasure, the ecstasy of the soul. We may achieve some spiritual destiny, but the real pleasure that the soul is seeking for, we may not achieve that. So he rejects it. So then Lord Chaitanya he offers the Shiromani Shloka, the topmost shloka of Bhagavad Gita. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam. But even Lord Chaitanya says, "Eho bhaija." This is also not complete. This is also external. So even the thought that I will surrender myself completely unto Krishna, because Krishna demands it, that is considered to be external. Why are we practicing Krishna consciousness? Krishna demands it. Our spiritual practices demand it. So whenever there is demand, it means there could be some force. It means it is not coming from our own independent desire. So sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam. Krishna has to say that. So where is the question of spontaneous attraction? There is a question of spontaneous attraction. So Lord Chaitanya rejects that. He says, Eho Bhaijya. This is external. Age kaha ar. Please speak something more, something higher than this. Then he offers that verse from the 10th canto of Lord Brahma. Jnane prayasa mudapasya namante. That giving up the endeavor to achieve knowledge and simply trying to serve the great souls through oral reception, being in the position that one is without changing anything much, one achieves that which is impossible to achieve. One conquers the unconquerable. Now this thought process has not been offered in the previous supplications. Conquering the unconquerable or achintya bheda bhed. That hasn't been offered. Because unconquerable by definition means cannot be conquered. But if you conquer the unconquerable, this is something interesting. And that is where Lord Chaitanya says, Theek. This is okay. But tell me something more on this. So, jnane prayasam. Prayas, atyahara prayasascha. The endeavor to achieve knowledge is the greatest obstacle for someone who wants to surrender to the process of oral reception. Knowledge of scriptures, knowledge of the science of Krishna consciousness, the endeavor to achieve such knowledge becomes the greatest obstacle in the process of oral reception. Because someone just day before yesterday, I think it was Gaurahari Prabhu, he was mentioning in his class, I think quoting Govinda Prabhu, that knowledge corrupts one's innocence. Too much information. Knowledge in that sense, too much information. You see, for the conditioned soul, knowledge means information, which is not the real definition of knowledge. For the Baddha Jeev, the Dehi Naam, the Dehi, our understanding of knowledge means information. How much ever we will spend our time in Krishna consciousness, our understanding of knowledge is information. Why? Because we are conditioned living entities. And Prabhupada gave the example of Khira Chor and Hira Chor. Everyone knows that? Khira Chor, Hira Chor. Someone was giving that argument of Prabhupada, if someone has really bad karma, therefore very bad result, really good, some not so much bad karma, not such a bad result, right? And Prabhupada was saying, all right, let me just tell you a story from India. There was a thief who went to the jewel market, the diamond market, and stole diamonds. Diamonds in India is called, or in the Hindi or Sanskrit language, or not the Sanskrit, the local Hindi language is known as Hira. And Chora means thief. So he asked his students, what is this stealer, what do we call a person who steals diamonds, a thief who steals diamonds? And they said, oh, diamond thief. Prabhupada said, yes, that is called a Hira Chor. And in India, there are cucumbers sometimes sold. You know cucumbers? They are small cucumbers, long cucumbers, the snake gourd, something like that. Not the snake gourd exactly, but another type of cucumber. So that is called as Khira. It is called Khira. Especially in Bengal, UP, MP, these parts, they know what is Khira. In the southern parts beyond, to the south of the Vindhya, this word is not so common, Khira. It is called as Kakdi in Marathi here. But in North India, it is called as Khira. So Prabhupada, he was from Bengal, so he gave this example. He said, so a person goes into the vegetable market and steals cucumbers or Khira. So now he had told his disciples that Chora means thief. He had told his disciples diamond thief is known as Hira Chor. And he told his disciples that cucumber means Khira. So he asked his disciples, so now what do you call a thief who steals cucumbers? And they said Khira Chor. So Prabhupada said Hira Chor or Khira Chor, both are chor. Both are thieves. Or sometimes, you know, our preachers give the example. If one has failed You know, in India, passing mark out of 100 is 35 marks. So if one is getting only 10 marks, one fails. And someone gets 34 marks and fails. Does it make a difference? Can a person who's failed by getting just 34 marks say, see, I'm better than you. I've failed only by one mark. No, fail means fail. The result shows fail. Even as you repeat class. Right? So, the nature of the conditioned living entity is that till that time we really become deconditioned and reconditioned or situated in a constitutional position. Till that time, we are either going to be hirachors or khirachors. And we have to be aware of it. Therefore, knowledge in terms of just information corrupts the innocence. And then one starts thinking that one is knowledgeable, and that knowledge is not real knowledge, because some of the definitions of knowledge that have been given that I have understood from the scripture and I would like to share from you is that knowledge, which is also called as vidya, dadati vinayam. Knowledge should bring about vinaya, or it should bring about a humble countenance. If it does not bring about humble countenance, then it is simply information. Now, it does not mean just humility. It means a countenance or an attitude, a character based on humility. Right? So that is one understanding of knowledge. Now, let us see another understanding that Krishna gives from the Bhagavad Gita. What is knowledge? He says, I give the knowledge. And that knowledge destroys the ignorance within the heart. Nashayami atma bhavastu jnana deepena bhasvata. So he says, with the deepa, the torchlight of knowledge, lamp of knowledge, I destroy. What does he destroy? Ajnana jamtama. He destroys the deep ignorance within the heart. He, with that knowledge, destroys. So real knowledge should destroy the ignorance within the heart. It should not simply allow it to stay or increase it. That is not real knowledge. So first, my understanding of knowledge brings about a humble countenance. Second, it should destroy lust, pride, greed, anger, envy, illusion, the desire for name, fame, prestige, to achieve, to be powerful, to be someone in this world. Ishwaraham, aham, bhogi, siddham, to all those qualifications have to go. Whether we classify them into very small categories or we give the extensive categories of ajnan, that have to be destroyed by knowledge. And the third is from the Shikshashtakam that I would like to quote or give reference of, where knowledge is called as Vidyavadhu Jeevanam. She is the wife of the holy name. Knowledge is the wife of the holy name. In other words, when one sincerely chants the holy names, just as a chaste wife follows the husband, knowledge comes along. The life of the holy name. So when we are chanting the holy names, does knowledge of Krishna become our life, our soul? Or is it simply information? Therefore, jnane prayasa. Hence, there is such an intense endeavor to get knowledge. It can be deep spiritual, scriptural knowledge, analysis, understanding, breaking down things, or it can be repetitive, ordinary knowledge. Why this happens? Why this does not go? Why this is not, I'm not getting this? More information, 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 information. Where is the transformation process? Both have to go hand in hand. If one wants information, one should show transformation. One must also project transformation. One must explain or make people comfortable that knowledge actually gives transformation, not create doubts by simply seeking information. Because information creates doubts. There has to be transformational understanding, behavior, and projection of it. Hence, it is so important that senior practitioners of Krishna consciousness share their projections. Not exactly projections, but their realizations in Krishna consciousness. So, jnane prayas. So, that is real jnana. However, this informational process, this informational marga of getting understanding, trying to understand more and more and more, the process of a typical jnani. Generally we think jnani means someone who simply speaks shlokas. But jnani is anyone who seeks just mundane information. Mundane means that which has nothing to do with transformation. At least not with our transformation. What is that? That in the material world or in our day-to-day lives is trying to rationalize everything in Krishna consciousness. The process of pratyaksha and anuman. Where is the question? There's such little. If our heart is occupied with just pratyaksha and anuman, where can shabda fit in? Where is their oral reception? Therefore, Lord Chaitanya accepted this. Eho theek. This is okay. This is nice. On this platform, go further. This is where you should start off. That grane prayas, give up the endeavors for seeking information. That gyan. Because Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga, once one has been engaged in positive devotional service, knowledge comes. The spiritual master automatically benedicts one with knowledge. Seeing one's endeavor and trying to do positive devotional service, which means at least the endeavor should be ahetuki ahapratyat. It should start off with that seed within our consciousness. Without hetu, and we must try to think that this is what we are going to do eternally. Not something just for name, fame, prestige, which is temporary. As soon as I attain that, process is gone. The endeavor has to stop. So at least that seed has to be there. The seed of that desire to, you know, understand and practice things in Krishna consciousness, which is positive devotional service. Vasudeve Bhagavati. It has to be something directly related to Krishna in service. Because if it is related to Krishna, it has to be related to us. We are Krishna's parts and parcels. We don't need necessarily to make an attempt separate for our own Krishna consciousness from Krishna. That is what Krishna consciousness is all about. Simply being conscious of Krishna always. That is what Prahlad Maharaj says. You decorate yourself, the face in the mirror is decorated on itself, automatically. So when we try to engage all of our resources simply in Krishna consciousness, the natural result is jnanam cha yat ahyutukam. Jnan comes. This requires such deep faith. Yeah? In all scriptures, the guru always asks the disciple, do you have such faith? Then walk on water. Come to me. Come here. Oh, no. How can I do that? This is not possible. My rationalizing mind, the information that I have, does not allow me to do that. So it's a question of faith. There's no proper oral reception. So where is anarth nivritti? Because after that nishtha will come a deep faith. So these are some deep-rooted anarthas. So bringing down the spiritual moiety to our level of rationalizing mind is one of the biggest obstacles of a conditioned living entity. I want to bring down Krishna, Krishna's name, Krishna's form, Krishna's activities to my level of Krishna consciousness. and rationalize it. Now it seems all right, it seems okay to our rationalizing mind that this is necessary for Krishna consciousness, because without such knowledge, how will we be fixed in Krishna consciousness? How will we have the Gyan Drishti otherwise? We think Gyan Drishti depends upon our own opening of eyes. That is the conditioned soul. Always, till the moment of liberation, you know, till we are really free from all the rajas and tamas, the iota of this understanding remains that I on my own will be able to understand Krishna. That is not how it works. It is always a descending process. So, although it appears to be good, it can be a very big obstacle, bringing down spiritual subject matters to our mundane level, dragging it down into the murkiness of this material world. Both are faith. Sridhar Maharaj, one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples, he makes this quote. I think he does. I'm sorry. But some acharya, some practitioner in Krishna consciousness makes this quote. He says, with our feet fixed in the quicksand of material murkiness, we try to reach out for spiritual, you know, subject matters. We are sinking deep in this quicksand. What happens to a person who's sinking in quicksand? They grab onto anything and try to bring themselves out. But quicksand is very powerful. It drags them down and drags down that object too. And therefore he says, this is the attempt of the conditioned living entity. Drag that down with their feet in the murkiness. Or in other words, still totally, you know, like our consciousness is enshrined within the samadhi of material consciousness or the material world. Very glorified, because it has been enshrined in this tomb. People glorify it. But what is that samadhi? It is the material realm. Dhanam, janam, kavitam, sundarim. All this. So, such rationalization is dangerous. And what is the danger? The danger is it leads to judgmental attitudes. Because we rationalize everything. Oh, this is what I know from scripture. This is what I have heard. And this is what my entire coterie, all my associates that I have gathered around myself, my janam, they also say I am correct. And therefore, such an event, such a personality is definitely wrong. Now, in the Christian world, they say it is not ours to judge. Because the only judge is He. Forgive ye as ye shall be forgiven. So rationalization or seeking such information which destroys our innocence. We want to know so much that is happening in Krishna consciousness from the scriptures, from other side. What I am referring to is gossip. That our conditioned mind starts rationalizing everything in Krishna consciousness. And not only that, we become so much addicted to this process of rationalization that we make prayas for it now. What happened? Where? We read scriptures with the notation of knowing how we will become judges or judgmental. Quotations from scriptures. How what I am doing is right and what something else is happening is wrong or could be wrong. Always that. Why keep dualities? And scriptures say don't be in duality. Practice Krishna consciousness without dualities. The first instruction Krishna gives to Arjuna is rise above dualities, O Arjuna. Nirdvandva. Even before he starts giving any substantial knowledge to Arjuna, he says rise above dualities. Dualities means good, bad, this, that. Now, can we afford the luxury of that? Life is finite. Our association with devotees is, the time is finite. Our mind is finite. Our capability of understanding things is finite. We are trying to understand something that is infinite. And we can think we have the luxury other than completely focusing all our energies on that which within this finite attempts, this finite realm, we can try to achieve something, a drop of that infinite moiety. Do we think we have that luxury to waste on? Or should we be focused just on our Guru Agya, the Guru Upadesh? Now some of us may feel we don't have Guru Upadesh. Really? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Adi Guru. He said, chant Hare Krishna incessantly. That is what all the acharyas down from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are giving. So do we have the luxury to do anything else other than that? Now the rationalizing mind will say, but how do we chant? How to make a chanting this and that? Well, let the rationalizing mind do that. Maybe we'll make an attempt to understand that. However, the practice is to chant. The practice is not to understand how to chant. If we have spent time in understanding, know that that time has to be positively engaged in the practice. If not, that the time is eternally lost. If it is not engaged in practice afterwards, the time we've spent in this rationalization process, if it is not dovetailed, Prabhupada and the Acharya is so very merciful, they allow us to dovetail our rationalizing mind. That is the process of dovetailing. If not, then that which we have considered time well spent in Krishna consciousness may actually become a waste. It may actually become a big burden on our head, helping us to sink more quickly into the ocean of material nations. So, jnane prayasam, throw it away, throw. It is like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj says, it's like holding hot charcoal in your hands. The attempt to rationalize things, which he in his books, he has said, the attempt to try to hold something against devotees is like holding hot charcoal in our hands. Because rationalization means holding things against people, against institutions, against the process. That is what the rationalizing mind does. So, udapasit, just as hot charcoal in the hands, do we need someone to tell us to throw it? It's a reflex action. Similarly, jnane prayasam udapasya namanteva. We have to begin to surrender and worship those who are Shruti Gata, those great souls who have kindly agreed to give us their valuable time. Their valuable time which is focused totally on Krishna consciousness. They have agreed to do that, to give it to us. They are engaged completely in the highest esoteric pastimes of the Lord and they take out time for us. Wouldn't it be just a little normal etiquette to give all our time to them? That is why jnane prayasam. Now, one small incident. How the rationalizing mind... Gaurhari Prabhu gave that class, brilliant class day before yesterday, because he gave so many examples of Maryada Vatikram and how it leads to offenses, or how it is offensive. Really brilliant class. So I won't go to all those examples and details, but one example, Ramchandra. Who was that? The disciple of Ishwarapuri? Ramchandra Puri. And what did he do? He was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, the godbrother of Ishwarapuri. What did he do? He saw his guru from whom he had received the same knowledge as all of the disciples. He saw his guru exhibiting spiritual emotions and considered them to be mundane lamentations. Do we think that simply staying with a great soul allows us access to this great realm of the esoteric pastimes? Well, scriptures tell us otherwise. Ramchandrapuri rationalized those emotions and brought them down to his level of understanding. And what did he do? Maryada Vyatikram. He transgressed the normal etiquette and started advising his spiritual master. Why don't you meditate on Brahman and just see the words that came out from that rationalizing mind? Not only transgressed the etiquette, not only transgressed that boundary of guru-disciple relationship, he's giving knowledge which in that parampara should not be even given. What sampradaya is going to spring up from Ramchandrapuri then? The sampradaya of offenses. And all because he wanted to rationalize it. And what did Ishwarapuri Maharaj do? Did he rationalize? Or did he take the teachings of his Guru Maharaj, he scanned it through his entire hard drive of his consciousness and chose appropriate verses to match with the mood of his spiritual master and assist him with those emotions to his ability. So both of them had the opportunity. One, rationalize, and the second, focused on Guru Seva. One thought he's doing Guru Seva, the other was engaged in Guru Seva. So that is a cheating mind. That is how dangerous this material world is. Padam padam yat vipadam. That is the vipad we are in. Therefore in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Antalila. So this is one example of Maryada Vyatikram. How the rationalizing mind can, even if we are practitioners for such a long time, and Ramchandrapuri was a practitioner for a long time. But one disciple went on to be the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the other saw defects in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not only saw defects, he created situations to bring out those defects. He started making plans to do that. He did that through the process of serving devotees. He used the process of devotional service to achieve his own ends. That is Maryada Vyatikram. And the result is horrendous. Now, when Vallabha Bhatt went to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, he came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu welcomed him so lovingly. And Vallabha Bhatt, he paid his obeisance to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with tears in his eyes. He said, "You are the supreme personality of Godhead in Kali Yuga. You have incarnated to spread the glories of the holy name." So many verses. Kaviraj Goswami explains his mood of devotion unto Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had told him of all the great devotees in Jagannath Puri when he had visited him at Adailagram near Prayag. He said, "Where are these devotees? I want to meet them. I want to meet them. I want to meet them." He said, "Come to Jagannath Puri. You will meet each one of them. There is Advaita Acharya. There is Nityananda Prabhu. There is Haridas Thakur. There is Damodar Pandit. There is Jagadanand Pandit. Great. You will be so happy in that association." She comes and he sees these devotees. And he sees Lord Chaitanya dealing so lovingly with all of his devotees. And then a desire arises within his heart. "I also want to become a special person in the heart of Lord Chaitanya." Now this pastime should be understood very, very in a delicate manner. We should not do Maryada Vyatikram while hearing this pastime, but just take the message. Because the Lord uses his devotees in various ways. The Lord sent back Damodar Pandit. He said, "He does even what no one dares to do. He chastises me. Damodar Pandit, please go back to Mayapur, to Navadvip. And look after Mother Sachi." That does not in any way put a black mark on his character. We have to stop this rationalizing mind. It seeks information. Oh, I've got information about Damodar Pandit now. Now I know. Just as he, we should be... No. That is an example. The principle is we should be careful, which Lord Chaitanya so lovingly explained to his disciple. So Vallabha Bhatt, that desire, I want to be also special within the heart of Lord Chaitanya. So what did Vallabha Bhatt do? He went to Lord Chaitanya and he said, I want to give some my explanations on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Not Lord Chaitanya is the Lord within the heart. He said, I don't know Srimad Bhagavatam. All I know is the holy names. I know so many interpretations on the holy names. Please hear from me. Lord Chaitanya says, from the holy names, I just know two. Shyama Sundar and Yashoda Nandan. I don't know any other names. Vallabha Bhatt was confused. So he said, all right, let me go and explain to the devotees. When the devotees saw Lord Chaitanya dealing with Vallabha Bhatt in this way, they also became careful. He would come and say, I want to explain something. They say, they would make some excuses and go away. So Vallabha Bhatt caught Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit said, he was a very, very sweet devotee. Couldn't say no to anyone. So when he came to Vallabha Bhatt, Gadadhar Pandit, within his heart he prayed, my dear Lord Krishna, I don't want to do something that is not sanctioned. I have seen that Lord Chaitanya does not hear this. I don't want to hear something that he has not heard. But then I do not want to insult this great personality by refusing. I can't do that. So, Lord Chaitanya, you are within my heart. You know my intentions. Please understand that. And he heard. Externally, Lord Chaitanya would, became a little angry with him and would not, anymore deal with Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit felt so much pain within the heart. But he said, Lord Chaitanya, I know he understands my heart, so I do not take this. I have nothing. I know Lord Chaitanya is merciful to me. Now, Vallabha Bhatt, after that, when he saw Gadadhar Pandit had heard, he said, now one has heard, now I'll go to others and explain. So he went to the assembly of devotees where Advaita Acharya was there. Started explaining it. Every explanation he gave, Advaita Acharya would show that how there's another explanation which is much better. Every time. And he felt so... how is that this devotee is no better than me? He couldn't understand. So one day, just out of frustration, because he was feeling, something of my mind should be accepted. Something special, a special place. Already, Lord Chaitanya had explained to all the devotees, this is Vallabha Bhatt, I met him. That speciality was there, but seeing how he was dealing with all other devotees, that desire arose. Something special like they have, like he has, like that person has. So, he went to Lord Chaitanya and said, I have written a commentary that does not accept the commentary of Sridhar Swami because that commentary has defects. And Lord Chaitanya spoke this verse. He said, Prabhu hasi kahe swami namane jai jeev Veshare bhitare tare kare. Namane jai jan Veshare bhitare tare kari agaman. For someone who does not accept a swami or a master, and the attitude is simply of a prostitute. But this struck the heart of Vallabha Bhatt. He went back feeling so much disillusioned. When I was in Prayag, Lord Chaitanya treated me with so much affection. Why is he behaving with me in this way? And then it dawned on him. Because I am trying to prove that I am someone special. So he went and begged forgiveness from Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya said, sincere forgiveness. And Lord Chaitanya said, you are a learned scholar and you are a great devotee. These two qualifications can never make one an offender. See, knowledge real knowledge, can never make one offensive. Sridhar Swami, by his mercy, we are understanding Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyone who does not follow him will not be able to understand the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam. But if you follow in the footsteps of Sridhar Swami, then you can understand the real import of Srimad Bhagavatam. The same thing was asked by Lord Chaitanya, by the sannyasis of Varanasi. Why don't you practice like us? Read Vedanta. And sit with us and discuss Vedanta. Why don't you do that? And he said, that my spiritual master said, Nahi tomar Vedanta adhikar. You don't have the qualification to read Vedanta. Simply chant Krishna naam japa sada ai mantra sar. Just chant Hare Krishna because this is mantra sar. So that is our cue in Kali Yuga. The cue is, Murkh tumi nahi tomar Vedanta adhikar. We have no qualifications for understanding Vedanta because Vedanta, as once Sri Prabhupada was telling Giriraj Swami Maharaj, that this Vedantis, by reading the Vedanta, they have simply become Vedanta. Our acharyas have made them Vedanta, or without teeth, without substance. Because they do not understand the real import of Vedanta. So we do not have the adhikar to know the Vedanta. There is Kali Yuga, we have no adhikar, we have no qualifications to understand the import of real knowledge. The only thing that we have adhikar for is Krishna Nama Japa Sada, Ai Mantra Sar. That is our only adhikar, as explained by Lord Chaitanya. So that is the cue. And to conclude, this is a very important purport from the Srimad Bhagavatam that one would like to keep within its heart. It is 3rd canto, 4th chapter, 26th verse, the purport. Although one may be well versed in the transcendental science, one should be careful about the influence, about the offense of Maryada Vyatikram, or impertinently surpassing a great personality. So, a warning is given by Srila Prabhupada here. Although one may be well versed, one must not be impertinent to transgress. And the transgression is we want to surpass a greater personality. According to scriptural injunctions, one should be very careful of transgressing the law of Maryada Vyatikram because by doing so. So, if one has read scriptures, then one should know the scriptural injunction. Otherwise, what have we read in the scriptures? So, Prabhupada says, according to scriptural injunctions, one must know that if one transgresses the law of Maryada Vyatikram, what happens? So, this is the gruesome result that one faces because of Maryada Vyatikram. One loses his duration of life. One loses his opulence. One loses fame. And one loses piety. And most of all, one loses the blessings of all of the world. So that's the result that we may go towards by this Maryada Vyatikram. Now, Prabhupada, he says something very important. To be well versed in the transcendental science necessitates awareness of the techniques of spiritual science. Transcendental science, to be well versed in it means one must know the techniques, the etiquette, the culture of spiritual science. You see, in the spiritual world, everyone is not meditating individually, but there is nice, loving relationships. So there are techniques there involved. Uddhava, being well aware of these technicalities of transcendental science, advised Vidura to approach Maitreya Rishi to receive transcendental knowledge. Vidura wanted to accept Uddhava as a spiritual master, but Uddhava did not accept the post because Vidura was as old as Uddhava's father, and therefore Uddhava could not accept him as a disciple, especially when Maitreya was present nearby. Now sometimes a younger person in terms of age may become the spiritual master of an older personality. That is possible. But especially if there is an older personality, then one does not transgress Maryada Vyatikram. The rule is that in the presence of a higher personality, one should not be very eager to impart instructions. This is a very important word. One should not be eager. That is prayas. One should not be eager to impart instructions in the presence of a higher personality. And the next clause that Prabhupada gives is so very, very instructive. Even if one is competent and well-versed. So, Uddhava decided to send an elderly person like Vidura to Maitreya, another elderly person, but he was well-versed also because he was directly instructed by the Lord while he was about to quit this mortal world. Since Uddhava and Maitreya were directly instructed by the Lord, both had the authority to become the spiritual master of Vidura or anyone else. But Maitreya, being elderly, had the first claim to becoming the spiritual master. Especially for Vidura, who was much older than Uddhava. See, there is such finesse here. These words are so meaningful. Again, a very, very deep warning. One should not be eager to become a spiritual master cheaply for the sake of profit and fame. That is a rationalizing mind. That is Rajogun. For cheap fame and profit, but should become a spiritual master only for the service of the Lord. The Lord never tolerates the impertinence of Maryada Vyatikram. And this is his concluding remark. One should never pass over the honor due to an elderly spiritual master in the interest of one's own personal gain and fame. Impertinence on the part of the pseudo spiritual master is very risky to progressive spiritual realization. And this chapter is going to describe now, this verse is described that how just by the simple act of thinking that he was a sinner and wanting to kill him because they thought they are Kshatriya, you know, princes, and they have the right to do it, they have the right to judge. And they had judged him properly. They wanted to kill him. The sage just opened his eyes and that is all he did. There was no fire coming out of the eyes of the sage, nothing. Just opened his eyes and observed these personalities. And that glance, which was so much full of spiritual realization, just that glance, which was loaded with spiritual realization of this. He was the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. That glance, simply, what did it do? The elements that are the energies of the Lord, they revolted against those conditioned living entities. And they punished them appropriately. They were burned to ashes. And Prabhupada scientifically explains how they were burned to ashes. It is possible that one can be burned to ashes by one's own fire within the body. So, the lesson that I have learned from this is that it is never too late to beg forgiveness. But forgiveness is not all. Repentance has to be followed with penance, with proper action. So I kindly beg the forgiveness of all the devotees, knowingly, unknowingly, that I may have transgressed the laws of Maryada, and bless us that we can properly fix our mind on the goal of Krishna consciousness, especially in Kali Yuga. Krishna mantra japa sada ahi mantra sar. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Anantakoti Vaishnav Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Jainitai Gaura Premanande.